Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show rolling on here on a Friday. Heath in for Chuck today. And look, you know, if Chuck is billed as the king of college football, at some point you got to have somebody come at you and challenge you for the title. I don't know that that specifically is why Chris Lowe from ESPN is here today, but the king's not home, so we can't have the duel at the moment. But Chris is making a play for the king title, too, because just this week, big pieces with Nick Saban kind of continuing to take a look at Saban adjusting to post-football life. And then today, a really big sit-down with Kirby Smart that if you're a dog fan or just a fan of college football, you're certainly going to want to read. And we're fortunate enough to have Chris join us from ESPN now here on the Chuck Oliver Show on the Duncan Newsmaker line. Chris, how are you?
I'm good. It's good to be with you guys.
Appreciate you making some time for us. Let's start with the one you dropped today, because obviously Kirby Smart is someone who, if anybody could step into the shoes of Saban as sort of that lead figure of college football, he's as good a candidate as anybody. The thing I think is kind of interesting about him, Chris, is that it does not seem like that is something he is terribly interested in. He still seems like a guy who just wants to coach his football team, have a great program year in, year out. He doesn't seem to be looking to take that national stage about issues or anything else right now. It's kind of interesting to me.
No, he's pretty zoned in. You're right on his team. I think that's what makes Kirby so good, is he doesn't get caught up in all the peripheral things. But he cares about the future of the sport, and we talked some about that yesterday. He's like most coaches. The portal is his biggest headache. The way kids can move year in, year out with no repercussions and the tampering that goes on. Not all coaches don't like that, but no, he's not a guy that's out there sort of leading the charge for reform or that type of thing. But again, I want to be very clear here. He is concerned about the future of college football and where it all ends up. But he's also compartmentalized everything, and he just is, you know, sort of straight ahead kind of guy with his program and recruiting, developing, evaluating. Nick Saban was awesome at that. That's what made him so good. But you know, there's a reason that Kirby has fallen in line. He worked for Nick at three different stops. Think about it. He was with the LSU, he was with the Dolphins, he was with Alabama, and I think at Georgia, he's taken that same model. He's sort of put his own sort of imprint on it, and you see what they've done. I mean, Alabama under Saban the last 5 years was really, really good, but I think the best team in college football, if you look at everything that Georgia has done over the last 5-6 years, I think Georgia is right there at the top.
Yeah, we've certainly seen Saban proteges go to programs that had excellent resources, and for whatever reason, it did not translate. They could not make it work. Why was Kirby able to take it and not do a complete Xerox of it, but put his own spin on it at a place with resources and make it so effective?
Yeah, I think a couple things. I mean, that's his school. He knows that state like the back of his hand. You know, his dad was a high school coach there. He knows a lot of the high school coaches. He understands the people there who are important, the connections that he's had there for a long, long time. I think that's a big part of it. The other part is Kirby is a supremely confident person. He's not afraid to be who he is. Yes, he learned a lot of things from Nick. He's told me multiple times when we talked that it's sort of the core of what they do. It's pretty similar to what Alabama has done. He's also not been afraid to go out and do things the way he feels like he needs to on internet program. It's so down to attracting talent, but not just attracting it, but developing guys. And he pointed this out to me the other day when I was with him. I hadn't thought about it. But, you know, his last few years, he's had teams, he's had a lot of older guys that hung around, but he's also had some new faces that they've been able to develop and get ready to play. And when their time comes, they're ready to go. That's, to me, what separates Georgia. When you go watch Georgia practice and you go watch sort of their defensive linemen in one corner, their linebackers, their offensive line, it really is difficult to tell if you don't know all the numbers and who's who, which guys are first team and which guys are second team. And by creating that competition on the practice field that he's been able to create, that to me is what has separated Georgia over the last 3 or 4 years.
ESPN's Chris Lowe with us here on the Chuck Oliver Show. Heath in for Chuck today. Chris, you know, one of the things that you talked to him about in the piece is the evaluation component. You know, I think people sort of assume that programs like Georgia, Alabama, they're recruiting machines, they're going to land 5 stars left and right if they want to. But if you look at Georgia, obviously, I mean, Stetson Bennett's the ultimate example of somebody who didn't come in with that kind of billing, but it's not like Brock Bowers was a top 50 national recruit. A Ladd McConkey, who might even be a first-round pick, obviously was not that kind of guy. They have done, when they don't take that elite top-shelf talent, man, they have done a remarkable job of finding guys who play like it.
Yeah, I think John Bullard was another guy like that. You know, guys that they liked, guys have come to their camp, for instance, that maybe weren't rated out the wazoo, that they said, hey, this guy can play. He fits what we want. This is what we're looking for, an outside linebacker or a nickel guy. Let's get him. And yet they've also been able to go and beat the Alabamas and the Floridas and the Florida State, the recruiting trail for the 5-star guys. So, yes, he's got a really good mix. And the thing that he has told me a couple times when I've talked to him about that whole process is, we believe in our evaluation system, and the key word there is our. We're not caught up in where all the services have guys ranked, where they don't have them ranked. They're very thorough. That staff as a whole works very hard. They work together, piecing together the kind of guys that they feel like are going to work and thrive in their system. And I think the other thing he said in that piece is, listen, we've been pretty good at weeding out. I don't know if that was his exact word, but weeding out the guys who are not willing to come in and compete. And I think that's a hard thing to do when you're recruiting, especially now with the money that's dangling out there and the deals, is finding guys that want to come in and want to compete and they thrive on competition. And Georgia has done that. Alabama did that over and over again under Nick Saban. I think Georgia now has sort of taken the lead in being that program that goes out and finds great football players who also want to come in and be coached really hard and want to be challenged and aren't afraid to go on the practice field and prove that they're the best player.
Chris Lowe with us from ESPN. And so you had the big conversation with Kirby. Again, that's out today on the ESPN website. I definitely encourage you to follow that, to take a look at it if you were a Georgia fan. Earlier in the week, you had the check-in on Nick Saban. You were the one who broke the Saban story in the first place, that he was retiring, and got the details of kind of how that all came together. What's it like to check in after a couple of months and say, hey, how's life? You sure about this?
You know, we won't know for sure until we start playing football, until we get into preseason camp. I think he's enjoying it. You know, he's, as he said, he's doing things at a pace that he's never really gotten to do them before on his terms. I know he likes that. He likes spending more time with his wife, his grandkids, and playing golf. I think they're still down in Florida at their place in Jupiter Island. And that's I think they bought that house a little over a year and a half ago, so that's new for him. But he's going to, and he admitted it, and his closest confidants have said the same thing. The real test for Nick will be when preseason camp starts, you know, and when they get into the season. And those things that he loves doing, the thing he loves doing more than anything is coaching and teaching and being on the practice field. And he loves evaluating players and going to see players, watching tape, you know, getting on a plane and going to talk to guys. And those things for him never got old. That's sort of what kept and coming back, even if he approaches 73. I think he will get a little bit of his football fix in working with ESPN. He's going to be a big part of the draft coverage next month. He's going to be on game day set every week during the season. So he will prepare and work and go at that the way he did coaching and recruiting, which means I'll give you a little preview. He will be must-see TV because he will be more prepared and have more knowledge of these games and matchups and players than probably anybody ESPN's had on in a long time. He is. He told me when I was with him, he had a bunch of stuff he was watching film on players. And a lot of these guys, either guys that he recruited, evaluated, coached against, or coached for in this upcoming draft. So I would say his inside perspective will be pretty fascinating come draft time.
One of the nuggets you had in your piece was from Jeff Allen, who was the one and only staffer, I guess, who made the entire ride with him from the minute he showed up to the minute he retired there at Alabama. It was talking about Ramajamas, the restaurant that now Saban can see from his new office. And Chris, it drives home how much these dudes are just living in a submarine. Because I remember the stories when I was a kid, like Don Shula, they introduced Don Shula to Don Johnson from Miami Vice, and he was like, great job you guys are doing. And he thought they were actual Miami Vice police officers. He had no idea what the TV show was, anything about it. He thought they were real. You know, I remember Joe Gibbs being asked about Oliver North when he was testifying in the Iran-Contra affair. Had no idea who he was. It just drives home how incredibly laser-focused these guys are, that Saban had a restaurant that's been there the entire time he's in Tuscaloosa, and he apparently had no idea. And it's literally right next to the stadium.
Is you could hit a pitching wedge from the stadium into its parking lot. It's one of those iconic places that a lot of SEC schools have. And Jeff Allen, by the way, Saban refers to Jeff as the last man standing, which I think is pretty funny from his time in Vanna. But no, you're right. The singular focus that the great ones, really most coaches have, is probably hard to convey or hard for the average Joe to understand, because you are. I mean, especially now with all the hats you've got to wear as a head coach with transfer portal, NIL, recruiting, the groups that you have to go and speak to. You're just being tugged at from all different directions. And, oh, by the way, you got to coach football. You got to get ready to play in a conference that's the toughest in the land. And it's only getting tougher with OU and Texas coming in. So, yeah, when Jeff told me that story, I laughed, but I wasn't surprised. I mean, Nick's own daughter, Kristen, said that he probably wouldn't know the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama, or who it was, and it came to his front door. So he's just, that's who he is. And he knows what's right in front of him. And I think that's probably the refreshing part of his life right now. It's, he can sort of exhale a little bit, step back, maybe be a normal person, not have to worry about everything that you have to worry about or be zoned in on as a head football coach in the SEC. A lot of that, though, is just him. That's just the way he's wired. I mean, his quote about, if you saw it, about, I've just been in a hurry for 50 years. Everything I've done in my life, I've been in a hurry. The next meeting, the next practice. What am I going to say to the team? I got to get on the plane to go see this recruit out in California. He said, when I go to our lake house in Lake Burton, I'd be in a hurry. And I'm thinking, for what? Well, he told me, he says, not having to be in that mode all the time, even though much of that was self-imposed, is something I think he's really looking forward to in his life.
Yeah, the one thing that surprised me with regards to that piece and him talking about modernizing and whatnot a little bit was the part about the text messaging, because I had a friend who said, this sounds like a guy who was released from prison after 25 years, and it's like he's learned how to send a text by himself, that kind of thing. Chris, that was the one thing that surprised me, just because so many kids communicate via text message with the way he recruited. I would have thought that would have been something, I'm sure he didn't want to learn. I would have thought that would have been something he would have learned 10, 15 years ago when that became the primary way to communicate with kids. That did surprise me a little bit.
Yeah, I think he graduated about 2 years ago to texting a little bit, but maybe 2, 3 forward texting. I think sometimes he had his assistants do it for him. His aides there in the office or somebody else. He just did not. He believed in talking to people. He's old school. He said, hey, if I need to talk to somebody, I'll get on the phone and call them. But no, as far as going back and forth with players and prospects on text messages, that wasn't his deal. I think now he's doing a little bit more. I've actually gotten a few texts from him in the last year or so, which is I've known the guy for 20 years, and those were the first ones. But again, they were maybe 3 or 4 word texts. Now, emails, I don't think until now he'd ever sent an email. Someone might have sent one for him, but there again, that's not him. Now, the one thing that I would not look for him as he evolves into retirement is for him to somehow join social media, which would be a riot if he did. Taking, as his daughter said, taking selfies and on the golf course and tweeting about some ball game, but that don't think we're going to see Nick Saban get to that point anytime soon.
So you're telling me the Saban TikTok account I followed is a fake? That's kind of disappointing. Oh, well.
No, but you know, there is a side of him that if he would ever show it publicly, it's pretty funny. I mean, he's into music, loves music. I think you've seen some clips get out there when he would have kids in their families for official visits. They do some dancing, some line dancing. He dresses up the last couple of years and for Halloween-themed costume parties. I think he was the Explorer John Smith this last year. So there is a, believe it or not, there is a side to him that's not just a football droid, but he has a pretty tight circle. He doesn't just show it to everybody. I know his wife, Terry, and his daughter, Kristen, get a kick out of trying to push him to show that side more. And you know what? Now that he's retired, we might see that a little bit more out of him. We might see a little bit more of that public side, or excuse me, that private side of Nick Saban that we haven't seen a lot while he's been a head football coach.
Well, nobody's done a better job of kind of giving people a little look inside of it than you, Chris. Again, both these pieces this week, must reads for fans, ESPN.com. Chris, really appreciate you making some time for us here on the Chuck Oliver Show, man.
Yes, sir. And you guys have a great day.
There you go. Chris Lowe from ESPN. Again, you're definitely going to want to check him out. But just that idea of Saban, like, now you learn to text? Now? Now, after all these years, now you want to actually communicate that way? Heck, I would think you'd want to make more phone calls than ever. But better or worse, you're going to see a bunch of him in the next month. And I'm with Chris. The insights, Saban has already done so much TV. Normally, the thing you'd be worried about is how a guy adapts. He's already done so much TV. He's going to be fine with the basics of, you know, what, how to be on camera, how to pace, how to not try and talk so much and fit too much in the time that you've got for them to announce a pick or whatever. I think he's going to be sensational in that role. We'll see what it looks like when he's on a set with 3 hours to fill and people screaming all over the place on game day. We'll see what that looks like. But on the draft, I think he's going to be absolutely tremendous. It is the Chuck Oliver Show. Heath in for Chuck. We're going to check in on Notre Dame in about 15 minutes. Keep it right here.
Always college football time in the South. Now back to more of the king of college football, Chuck Oliver, on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show continuing on. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. Chuck will be back in the swing of things coming up on Monday next week, but we will keep the college football conversation going on through until we get your full 2 hours worth for you today. So, one of the things that we've obviously touched on with some of our guests, including David Lake earlier from InsideTheU.com from Miami, is what's coming 2 weeks from Monday. That's the opening of the transfer portal and the first time that it has opened up where everybody kind of is playing on the same level playing field. Before, you had some schools who were more willing to take chances than others because they're saying, are we sure the NCAA is not going to find some way to try and hammer people for this? Are we sure? Let's just let some of these folks. It's kind of like when you're on the highway and maybe you're going 5 over the speed limit, 7 over the speed limit, close enough that you think you're okay. But at the same time, if a police officer did want to pull you over and say 77 and a 70, he'd have the right to do it. So like, let's just kind of keep it around there. And then there's that guy that goes by you going like 95 and you say, okay, now I can get it up to about 80, because if that guy's going 95, he's going to be the one who gets busted. And so he could be the rabbit for me for a few miles. I can go 80. Well, before, that's what you had. You had some people saying, we'll let Tennessee be the rabbit. We'll let some of these other schools be the rabbit. We'll just keep it at 77 and see how it goes. Now everybody's going 90, unless you just don't have the dough to. But if you want to and you have the horses, you're going to be able to go 90 now. And so the question becomes, if you don't have the horses, if you've got a 4-cylinder, everybody else in your conference is rolling with a V8, how do you change that? We mentioned earlier in the program, spring games, the way that they've been done recently might change. You might need to move your spring games earlier. Maybe you have spring games before the end of spring practice, even if that's something that you think you need to do and still have some practices somewhere down the line. But you're not going to want to have your spring game and have kids still having to practice after you have the portal deadline open. You may have kids that bail on you with 3 or 4 practices or even 2 weeks worth of practices to go. If you were one of these schools waiting until the 27th to have your spring game, you could have kids bail on you right in the middle of your practice to get into the portal because they don't want to miss out on opportunities. Things are about to change. I think that you're going to see things move forward because they're not going to have any choice unless they move the portal entry time back. And you're also going to see some of these schools that don't have but 4 horses when everybody else has 6 or 8 do stuff like what Minnesota is doing. Minnesota is not having a spring game this year. Instead, Minnesota had 1 open public practice, so just any random Joe fan that wanted to see a practice could. And then they're going to have a private practice. And the only way you can come to the private practice is if you are a certain level of donor to their NIL collective, which is something called Dinkytown Athletes. And if you're wondering why Dinkytown, that's the name of the area that is actually where Minnesota is located, is they call that area Dinkytown. So that's why, even though Dinkytown Athletes sounds like a 6-year-old, like a preschool athletic squad, it's not. Dinkytown is the actual name of the place. But that's if you want to go to Minnesota's second practice that's open to anybody, it's going to be you write a check to Dinkytown and then you get to go. But there's not going to be any kind of public spring game shown on the Big Ten Network. There's not going to be everybody comes down and makes a day of it. That's going to be another direction that you're going to see things go. Now that the schools can do more to directly encourage NIL, you're going to probably see a lot of this kind of thing. Maybe it won't be as explicit as we won't have a spring game, because I suspect, I've never been to the Minnesota spring game, but I suspect they didn't do giant numbers anyway. Whereas if you said at a place like Auburn next week, we're not having a spring game, you'd have local hotel owners, you'd have business owners say, whoa, 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 that's a big day for us. That brings people in a way that nothing else other than graduation in the next couple of months is going to do. Don't mess with that. Minnesota probably doesn't have that issue, but you're going to see more of these kind of pay per access ways of doing things. It's coming thanks to NIL.
Now,
spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
So, Robert, I want to thank you for your time. I just don't think you're the right person for this position.
I don't understand. Was it something I said?
Well, we did a background check on you and found some things of concern.
If you're in charge of hiring for your company, you know how helpful a background screening can be. That's why companies that use Horizon Background Screening make smarter hiring decisions. Don't let the wrong hire put your company at risk. Get the real story on your candidates at horizonscreening.com. Horizonscreening.com.
Back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Chuck Oliver Show continues on. Heath Klein in for Chuck today. Again, we should have King back in his usual spot coming up on Monday. Of course, it is a Good Friday and Easter weekend. If you are someone who celebrates, we hope that you have a positive weekend with family and whatnot. But again, everything back to normal here on Monday's show, as far as we know. We are scheduled right now to head up to South Bend. Hopefully we'll be able to do that, check in on how things are going at Fighting Irish practice, where if you look at it overall, the conditions are pretty positive for Notre Dame, but there's a couple of injuries that have happened that definitely changed the conversation at least a little bit, and particularly the Riley Leonard injury. That's a guy, even though he's played a lot of football,
that's a guy that it could be a pretty significant deal for them if he is not able to at least get more time in with his guys in the offseason. Just you need to get that timing down with your receivers. You need time in a new system. He's somebody that certainly has the athletic ability to be a productive player for them, but it's not just a plug-and-play guy. Like Sam Hartman, for better or worse, the amount of games he played, the only reason that Sam Hartman came back to play another year of college football was that Sam Hartman was someone who had already done everything he could do in the Dave Clawson slow mesh offense at Wake Forest. And the NFL, even now, is not talking about Sam Hartman as any kind of high draft pick. I think he'll get drafted, but probably third day draft pick. And you know, look, Brock Purdy will tell you, you go to a team late rounds, sometimes something can happen. A lot of the times, not much, Will, but sometimes you make an impression and maybe a couple injuries happen, things click, and all of a sudden, there you are, getting a chance to play in a game situation or two, and then if you handle it well, who knows? But Sam Hartman, even with what he did at Notre Dame in a different offense, different setting, was never able to radically change the perception of him as a guy who was not a top-tier NFL prospect. But that was the only reason he was there. He had played so much football at Wake Forest, there didn't feel like there was anything else he could accomplish with 12 or 13 more games in Winston-Salem. That is not where Riley Leonard is. Riley Leonard was being talked about as someone who, you know, might have some potential as a guy who could be a player with NFL future from Duke, but he still was someone who has a lot of growing to do as a player to get to the point where he could be a high prospect. He has more ceiling, I think, though, as a prospect than Sam Hartman did. He just doesn't have as much game time in there. And so now we'll see. All right, go ahead and call him, David. We'll see whether or not it turns out that he is able to put that into play. But to have him miss time, any amount of time during spring football for them, that is something that is a concern. And then on the other side of the ball, a guy who was their top corner has had shoulder surgery. And again, there's questions about how much time he's going to miss. Now, it's not as big a deal when you're a defensive player missing time as it is when you're a new starting quarterback coming into a system. But still, Notre Dame with a couple of high-profile injuries here. And joining us to talk about them from up in South Bend is Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated. That's 247 Thing. He is our truest Notre Dame reporter. Come to you on the Duncan Newsmaker line. Tim, how are you?
Good. How you guys doing?
Appreciate you making the time. And let's start with what I was talking about earlier there. Last year, obviously, they had to integrate Sam Hartman into the offense. And you didn't feel like there were a lot of questions about how that would go because he'd played so much football. Riley Leonard is a guy, he needed all the spring practices. He needs the time in the offseason. And because of an issue, I guess, with the plate on his ankle, now he's going to miss time. How big a deal is this for them?
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. I think he needed it. He needed it with a new group of receivers. They really upgraded a receiver, but a couple are transfers. There's a freshman. It's a new group. He needed time with a new offensive coordinator installing a new system. So I do think it hurts. Everybody's favorite player at Notre Dame is always the backup quarterback, and Notre Dame fans like Steve Angeli now. But the plan was obviously for Riley Leonard to lead them this year. His dual threat ability in Mike Denbrock's offense and more weapons around him was important, especially since they're breaking in two new starting tackles when you go into Kyle Field there in late August. That's a tough environment for new guys.
It doesn't sound like there's a question of Leonard's availability for the fall, but how much are we talking of even off season that he's going to miss? I know he's out for spring, but how much of the OTA type stuff is he going to miss too?
Yeah, you know, we don't have that answer. I think he would be back in time for that, but I just feel that, you know, they were planning on they called a competition, and I mean, it probably is technically, but they were planning on picking their quarterback when the spring ended, and that won't happen now. I think it just, he should be fine in the fall, but you don't hit the ground running. It's not plug and play with a new offensive coordinator, new linemen, new receivers, and of course a new quarterback coming in. I don't think it's a question of his health in the fall. It's a question of when they have to, the bullets go live at Texas A&M. Is he what you exactly wanted? You know, against his old coach that knows everything about him, too.
Yeah, that's the thing that I think maybe some people that aren't Notre Dame fans don't realize is this isn't a year where Notre Dame is opening with, you know, a Northern Illinois or somebody like that kind of easing into the season. They've got Northern Illinois, but first there's a trip to Kyle Field before you do that, and then a Big Ten road game in week three against Purdue. So you don't have a ton of room for growing pains here.
Yeah, and he's, you know, I think not that you would go get Riley Leonard for Kyle Field, but that's certainly the number one place you want Riley Leonard is the beginning of the season, and Kyle Field, of course, the end of the season at USC. But it's, he was the veteran leader that you want there. You want, you just want him at his very best. And, you know, look, it's the second surgery on the ankle. If you said at the beginning of January he's going to miss the spring because he's having surgery on his ankle, maybe people wouldn't blink, but they said he'll be back for the spring, which he was. And so this just pushes the timeline further. And, you know, this can always be that spring fodder, much ado about nothing, if he's totally fine on August 1st and gets it going. But, like, I don't think it's realistic that almost all new wide receivers, but all young wide receivers or transfer wide receivers are the new quarterback in the new system. I think they really could have used him. And he will, of course, be on hand. It's just different not getting the reps.
Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated with us here on the Chuck Oliver Show. All right, so, Tim, whatever the situation is with Leonard going forward, obviously, as you mentioned, you got a lot of new parts, and you've also got a new OC for the third time in 3 years here with Denbrock. How is it looking as they try to install this thing?
Yeah, I think Notre Dame fans are pretty excited because this was partly personnel driven, but there was a lot of 12 personnel, two tight ends, and even some 13 personnel. Now, when you have Michael Mayer and you have Mitchell Evans, who broke out last year, and a lot of good tight ends are always coming through Notre Dame, and you don't have great wide receivers, you're going to go heavy on the 12 and 13 packages. And Mike Denbrock has done that in the past. In Cincinnati, he ran a lot of 12 package when he was with them, and they beat Notre Dame in 2021 and went to the playoff. Notre Dame now has, I think, six starting wide receivers before Bo Collins joins the fray. He's graduating from Clemson after transferring to Notre Dame. That's some quality depth. So you're going to see a lot more 11 personnel, and Notre Dame's replacing Audric Estime with a kind of a bevy of young backs, but they really like Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love, and Jeremiah Love is getting some work in the slot as well. That adds another receiving weapon. So you're going to see a much different attack than you're used to from Notre Dame because a lot of it's personnel-driven, and Mike Denbrock, I think, would always like to run a little bit less 12 package and 13 package than Notre Dame was doing in the past. Now, his last couple of years here, they did not. It wasn't that they were down on tight ends because those guys still did end up going pro, but it wasn't a tight end-driven offense those years. So I think Notre Dame fans are excited for the change. Look, it doesn't always mean it's the right change, right? But they even talk about throwing on third and one because they can spread the field now, and that wasn't something Marcus Freeman would say in the past.
So I look at this schedule and I say, okay, if Notre Dame goes 10-2 in an expanded 12-team format, it's very hard for me to imagine a 10-2 Notre Dame would not get into that expanded format. I look at this schedule and I see that game with A&M on the road that certainly could be tricky. And then I don't see a game again, all due respect to what they could do at Ross-Ade Stadium there at Purdue. I don't see a game between then and the ones with Southern Cal and FSU in November that on paper should be an obvious problem for the Irish. But then I remind myself, oh, wait, this is a coaching staff that has pulled off some big wins but has also found a way to stumble on Marshall, stumble on Stanford. How do they avoid those kind of losses? Because they probably will pick up at least one or two in those other games. How do they avoid the trip-up loss that might keep them out of that 10-2 window?
It is key. You mentioned at Purdue. That's always a one. You know, it's a bit of a modern. It used to be a great rivalry. In the modern era, it's a bit of a one-sided rivalry. Well, Purdue will be a lot more up for that one than Notre Dame. But Louisville comes to Notre Dame, and remember, Louisville was the trip up last year. I know they were ranked, and I know they had a good season, but they were that much better than Notre Dame, and they sure looked it that night. They will always Louisville is going to revamp itself or has through the transfer portal. That's a game at Notre Dame that you would assume Notre Dame would be ready for after kind of getting it handed to them last year, a year ago in Derby City. There's one trip up possible. You got to figure Florida State coming to Notre Dame late in the year. Notre Dame's a favorite in that if they're a good Notre Dame team. And then, of course, at USC is always a challenge. And USC, when USC is down, they still play Notre Dame pretty well out there. And I don't expect USC to be down. Other than USC's record, they play the who's who of college football. If you haven't looked it up yet, I think they play 7 of the top 30 winning programs of all time. Not that they're all on top right now, but it's something else, beginning with Michigan and ending with Notre Dame. So Notre Dame needs some of these teams to have good years. See, you need A&M to not be at its best just when they play Notre Dame, for Louisville not to be at its best for Notre Dame and USC as well. So I'm with you that they should not stumble. in many games this year, but it's been a long time since they haven't. Well, or you could just say it's been since Brian Kelly, who found a way his last 6 years to beat everybody he should have beaten. That plagued him at the beginning of his career, too, losing to teams he shouldn't have. But he went through a streak there. I believe it finished with 40 straight games where he did not lose to a favorite for Notre Dame. And if Notre Dame can do that this year, I mean, they should be favored in everything but A&M. I think A&M is actually favored right now by about 1.5 on those early lines.
Everybody's focused on the offense because of the obvious new qualities that we've touched on, but you do have consistency on the defensive side with Golden at the coordinator spot. But a guy in Benjamin Morrison, who would have been expected to be a really important contributor, shoulder surgery, out for a period of time. I guess they said they think he'll be back for the season, but how long are we talking here?
Yeah, the key is that he's back for the season because he's their best player. Scouts have said he is Notre Dame's best player. We can see it on the practice field, but he's Notre Dame's best player, and they need him back. They do have cornerback depth, but, you know, you have cornerback depth, and then you have Benjamin Morrison that allows that depth to shine. Morrison is key to that secondary. They returned in the NFL era and portal era. They brought back a Bronco Nagurski-winning safety. They're two defensive tackles that are 6 and 5 years as 4-year starters who are maybe their second and fourth best player on the football team in Howard Cross and Riley Mills, and a 6th-year linebacker in Jack Kaiser who has always taken a back seat to his classmates. He's the only one that came back, but he graded out better than him, better than the rest of their classmates like J.D. Bertrand and Maris Leifau every single season. So they have talent all over the defense, top-end talent, and it is the defense that I think is going to win them these early games. But Morrison is a difference maker because you can do a lot if you have complete lockdown on one side, and that's what Morrison can do on the boundary.
Last couple of minutes here with Tim O'Malley from Irish Show Illustrated. Tim, obviously the portal opens up in a couple of weeks. Some programs, we know they're going to go pedal to the metal. You know, everything is on the table now. Notre Dame obviously tries to kind of handle itself as being a little bit more a school that does things the quote-unquote right way. Given that at the moment it doesn't seem like there's any standards at all, is Notre Dame just going to be playing the same way that, say, you know, Lane Kiffin or Hugh Freeze is, or are they still going to have some things where they say, we won't do that?
They have some issues with getting in. This is hard to explain from the outside, but getting in non-graduates, so graduate transfers are simple because they've graduated from their university, and freshmen, people that end their freshman year, because transcripts match up a lot easier for those students that are freshmen. So it can be difficult to go portal shopping in April. One thing that has really improved, though, and Jack Swarbrick mentioned this in an exit interview with Irish Illustrated, they have learned to have some, there's a little bit more common sense and good faith with admissions, and like, hey, look, this kid goes to Stanford, or this kid goes to Duke or Northwestern, or he is about to graduate from Clemson. Shouldn't he be allowed to transfer to Notre Dame? And it's worked out a lot better for them. I do think they will portal shop. They did not get an offensive tackle, which they wanted in December, but they do like their young tackles. So you don't know how that works when you go portal shopping in April and you bring in a tackle that might start. Plus, they don't grow on trees, starting graduate transfer tackles. But I'm telling you, if a really good one came available, Notre Dame would go after him. Defensive tackle, they should be set. I mentioned their two starters. Gabriel Rubio is one of their better backups. He was not enrolled this spring. Marcus Freeman says they expect him back. They don't really like to talk about student privacy issues. If he's back, they have a pretty good two deep. If not, I could see them looking for that fifth-year backup-type graduate transfer defensive tackle to help. And if they go after something in the secondary, then you know there's an issue with Morrison because they don't need that. Offensively, they totally restocked a receiver. There's an interesting thing at tight end. Their best tight end tore his ACL in October. Their second best tight end has two ACLs, and they're taking it easy on him right now, even though he's healthy. And their third tight end tore his ACL twice. So it is humanly possible they could go after a veteran tight end, but it's just they do have a lot of young talent at tight end as well.
I assume when it comes to the financial part of NIL, they'd have whatever they need at this point.
Yeah, they're doing very well. It's hard to say. It's a fund called Fund, F-U-N-D, and that is led by Tom Mendoza from the Mendoza School of Business is involved in it. Brady Quinn was. They seem to do very well, and they have not defaulted on anything either, which is good. Football drives the bus for NIL. We've had some conversations with Pete Pavakwa, the new athletic director, about how it can work for college or for men's basketball. And obviously, they have a great women's basketball program, and they have some really good young stars you have to hold on to as well. But I don't think they ever have a trouble getting someone the money necessary at Notre Dame with this fund. And it's crazy because 3 years ago, it was the most hush-hush thing. We don't do NIL. We'll never do something like that. And they learned to do NIL what they call the Notre Dame way, in that – you know, there's charities involved, there's book signings and all that. You don't necessarily get paid that bonus up front. Though I believe Sam Hartman and Riley Leonard probably did. That's not as much common practice. And they have not yet gone that route for high school recruits, which for obvious reasons.
Tim O'Malley, Irish Illustrated. Tim, appreciate you making the time for us here on the Chuck Oliver Show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
There you go. There's the check-in in South Bend. And what he's talking about there is exactly the thing that's been interesting. You know, you've had some schools that just kind of have been arm lengths about NIL. Just say, I don't know, let's do it, but only do it a certain way. Let's only do it a little bit. Let's not get aggressive. April 15th, things are going to look real, real different. I'm not saying they're going to be good, by the way, to be clear. Saying that it's going to be different and it's going to be super aggressive is not to say that any of us are going to feel awesome about what we're watching, but it's going to happen regardless, and it's going to be fascinating to see just what that looks like, what speed it moves at. All of it. It's going to be that week here on the show, I suspect, is going to be bananas trying to keep track of everything that is going on. We will wrap things up for the week here on the Chuck Oliver Show straight ahead.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
Systematically, where do we want to go? Philosophically, where do we want to go? And the big word that kept sticking out to me was development. I just think it's... in this day and age, with all that's changed, I really feel like that can be one of our many advantages here. And so we really try to go after guys that we thought were very, just completely elite.
That is the voice of Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley, of course, a man who there's going to be some real scrutiny this year. Now, what does it look like post Caleb Williams? 2 years, you had an offense that was performing at an elite level with a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback returning for year two, and you still couldn't get close to anything big in year two because the defense was so bad, and it was so bad in part because you didn't do anything to address it. Now you have, and the guy you brought in, Danton Lynn, very impressive in what he did at UCLA. That was not a hire when Chip Kelly made it. It wasn't like people said, wow, you got that guy, look out. First year defensive coordinator and nailed it. Again, was a very effective performer for UCLA as DC. Now he goes across the town, and we'll see whether or not it'll translate into success for him in the Coliseum. If it does, if it lives up to what the possibilities are, then they don't need that defense to be amazing. They just need to be okay. If it's okay, you feel like even without Caleb Williams, somebody's going to be a pretty good quarterback sooner rather than later for Lincoln Riley. Even if he doesn't have a guy right this minute that has the same kind of qualifications and hype, because remember, Nelson wound up not being the player he was supposed to be, transferred to Boise State. We'll see what he is there. But at the moment, he doesn't have that Kyler Murray guy in the wings that's possible future number one pick, five-star recruit. Doesn't have that guy right this minute. But you feel like somebody's going to be scoring a pretty good number of points, putting up pretty good yards based on everything Lincoln Riley offenses do. You just got to get the defense fixed and at least okay, just not a bleeding sore. And we'll see whether or not he could do that. Going to be fascinating if he can. Imagine if they have a better season after Caleb Williams with a lesser quarterback. The people who already don't like Caleb Williams, how hard they'll be pushing that criticism of him, especially if he's not off to a hot start in the NFL with the Bears. That is what matters to me today. And of course, that is brought to you by thisstuffmatters.net. Make sure that you check them out again, thisstuffmatters.net. All right, so just one last thought before we go. I don't know what ESPN is going to do with all their programming for the fall. For example, this week there was a report that they might revamp the way that they're doing their Monday Night Football pregame show, that an RG3 might find its way off of that show, among others. So I don't know what all they're going to do with everything, but I hope that this year they will consider just saying, you know what, we don't need a guy making picks. the guys can make picks, all of them, but we don't need a guy trying to be the gambling guy to make picks. Because Stanford Steve, well, it's just not working out, buddy. We talked about how terrible his record was during last year. Last night, for the third time during the tournament, he put out a pick on social media. North Carolina can't lose. Money line. Didn't even want to bet the spread. North Carolina can't lose. Money line. And just like that, Alabama is in the Elite Eight with a win over North Carolina. I don't know, man. Some people were lucky. Some people were not. You can certainly argue Stanford Steve has been lucky with his rise to fame. But when it comes to public picks and gambling, brother, you're not lucky. It'll be time for somebody else to get a shot. Have a great weekend, Chuck. I'll see you on Monday.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
The Fan is ready for Braves season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.